So, hey, Storm Freaks, it's Phil. And tonight we've got the founder of AccuWeather, Dr. Joel Myers, is in the studio for the first time this evening discussing his new weather history book. It's all on episode 209 of Stormfront Freaks Live!
Going green.
Greenage.
Saddle up.
You got it, boss.
All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the most entertaining weather show. This is the award-winning and top 10 Stormfront Freaks Live. It's brought to you by all of our wonderful Patreon teammates. They're all scrolling across the bottom of the screen right now. Great group of people that we've had an opportunity now to really get to interact with them. A lot more and a lot of fun, but you can become a part of our Patreon team as well. Everybody on our team gets access to our exclusive Facebook group, which has over 50 of our past guests in there. We've got all our co-hosts in there, but it's just an opportunity for us to really post and talk about things we don't normally post or talk about in all of our other social media accounts. We also have tiers that include some exclusive merchandise. You can join us for as little as $5 a month and become a part of our team. You want to find out more, just go to stormfrontfreaks.com. All right, everybody, it's happy hour. It's always happy hour every time we record.
it is.
It gives us an opportunity for a couple things. Number one, to kind of let you know, we're a little more laid back weather show. We don't get into sciencey things too much, but when we do, we like to explain it and teach and educate. So hopefully you can learn a little bit in the process. But we like to have fun, and that's maybe the most important part of all that. But let's find out the co-hosts that are with us tonight, and you can put a name to the voice. And we will start with Brady Harris, our meteorologist and host of Outbreak. Stormcat, what are you drinking tonight?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I'm having – well, first of all, I'm a little bit – this is, like, a little weird for me. I, like, have the radar up in my right screen, and I keep, like, watching it to think, you know, oh, my gosh, something's about to happen here. But, guys, this is the podcast, so I'm excited to not watch the radar and just, you know, talk to Joel. And I'm drinking some water here. I'm drinking a little bit of water here. I know people are going to boo at that, but I've got a hockey game later tonight, so I can't be drinking too many beers – at least before the show. Maybe after the game, we'll have a beer or two, but not right now.
Stay hydrated.
Right. Very good. Mark Maz Massaro, our former on-camera meteorologist. Maz, what do you got this evening? After being at 50 West.
Yeah, we were at 50 West earlier. Ohio University had a big event there. We had the head coaches out there, so it was a lot of fun. So since I had some beer, I figured I'd probably lighten it up and just go with a little Buffalo Trace bourbon on the rocks. Whoa. So there's water in that. I'm just saying, Brady, you know.
It's in the ice, right?
Well, Buffalo Trace is fantastic. That's the best bourbon, I think.
Love it.
All right, well, we got MJ in the back running the show as always, so you don't see him, but I kind of get to see him a little bit in my little thumbnail there. So MJ is showing me a Coke. So who knows what he might have poured in there. But Maz, I'm going to turn it over to you so we can get to our most esteemed guest this evening.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We have Dr. Joel Myers, founder and executive chairman of AccuWeather, a proven visionary leader founding the company back in 1962. I can't believe it's been that long, and successfully establishing AccuWeather as the largest and fastest growing weather media company, as well as a global leader in weather-related big data business and predictive analytics. Now, he received the AMS 2018 award for outstanding contributions to the advancement of applied meteorology and the National Weather Association's 2017 Lifetime Achievement Award. He's recently released his book, Invisible Iceberg: When Climate and Weather Shaped History. Dr. Myers, welcome. My first question is, what are you drinking? And my second is, what kind of prompted you to write this book?
I'm drinking Saratoga water, and I have plenty of it.
Oh,
because somebody said keep hydrated, so I plan to do that. my book, and thanks for mentioning it. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate that. I gave a, I've always been interested in the impacts of weather and climate on humanity and history and how humans evolved and how they were impacted, how it changed the course of history, literally. And, you know, I first got interested in that in a course I took on climate taught by Dr. Al Blackadar at Penn State when I was an undergraduate student, and just kept collecting different tidbits and insights. I remember I was at Chichen Itza in Mexico, and it was a tour, and just putting things together as they were explaining things, some of it not believable, what I understood about climate. So dug into things, and some of it was believable, but other parts, you know, I figured out. And so I have 47 chapters in the book about different major events, starting with the comet that ended the age of the dinosaurs. And I first did this as a keynote at the American Meteorological Society's annual meeting, oh, it must be 7 years ago. And several people said, you ought to write a book about that. So eventually I did, and I launched the book at Davos in January of this year.
Wow. Now, everybody usually has some sort of event in their life, probably when they're younger, that kind of sparked the interest in weather. Did something like this happen to you when you were a boy? Was it outside of Philly, or where did you grow up?
Yeah, in the city of Philadelphia, and it was. When I was 3 years old, I fell in love with snow. And whenever it snowed, I got excited. When I was seven, my grandmother gave me a diary so I could write down the days that it snowed in Philadelphia. And there was a snowstorm also that year, and my aunt got trapped in our house because it was drifting, and you know, nothing was moving on the streets. And it just the awesome power of weather just had me hooked. So I knew from that time on I wanted to be a meteorologist, a weather forecaster. And I was also entrepreneurial as a kid. So when I was 11, I thought for the first time, wouldn't it be great if I could combine my burning desire to be a weather forecaster with my entrepreneurial spirit and someday start a company? And the turning point, I think, was in 1953. I was just turned 14 a few days earlier, and the forecast, you know, I followed all the forecasts on the radio and sort of put the weather together by listening to stations in Chicago and Des Moines, Boston. Don Kent, a great meteorologist in Boston, and so on. And when I saw the movie Queen's Gambit, that's sort of what I did, putting the weather map together on the ceiling and figuring out the forecast. So on that day, November 6th, 1953 in Philadelphia, I drove my bike to high school about an hour from my house. I'm sorry, about a mile from my house, not an hour, it only took about 15 minutes.
wow.
But and the forecast was for cloudy, chance of a shower, and a high 50. And I figured there was a chance of snow, perhaps a couple of inches, but 50, well, I'm probably wrong. So, but it started snowing around noon, and I pushed my bike home through S Plus, and we wound up with 11 inches in my house.
Oh my God.
So the temperature only fell to 33, never got to 32. It was heavy, wet snow. And I said, maybe I can do better than the forecast that the government's doing. And so there really is something to this. So that's how I got started.
So it sounds like maybe your ride home was an hour after the snowfall.
Yeah.
But we've got one of our viewers, Elizabetta, says, "Hey, Philly native here as well." So we got some Philly natives in the house. I want to know, you know, AccuWeather's become a big media and conglomerate and data company. What was your initial vision, you know, when you started getting involved in that? What was the ceiling at that time when you were first starting things compared to where it is now?
Well, of course, people said I was crazy trying to compete with the government. Forecasts are free. How can you charge people? And so I had to call 25,000 prospects before I had 100 paying customers, because most of them thought I was crazy too. So I had to prove to them that my forecasts were more accurate. They were worth paying for ski areas and cities and counties for snow fighting, utility companies. Sometimes I had to give free trials for the first 7 to 10 days to prove to them that there was real value in what I could provide. And then, of course, once I got to a certain critical point, I had testimonials and quotes from clients, and that certainly helped it take off. But it's always been a question of being creative. I mean, at AccuWeather, we use the term ICE, innovation, creativity, and entrepreneurship. And I've been blessed that so many people have bought into that and committed to that. I've had, you know, I taught meteorology and then weather forecasting for 21 years at Penn State, and hired my best students. And probably 18 or 20 of those students I hired worked only for me and then retired. And we have another probably 15 to 20 who, again, have spent their entire life working for AccuWeather and will retire someday.
Wow. What was minimum wage back then? Just asking.
I'm not sure there was a minimum wage.
$1? Wow. Yeah.
So if you had to make 25,000 cold calls, how long did that take?
Yeah, seriously.
That was probably over a period, I don't know, 12 years or so.
Wow.
Do you remember who your first client was? Like, was it like, assuming someone in the private industry, like who was that?
I do remember, because Dr. Charles Hosler, my mentor, great professor at Penn State, who believed in, you know, and supported me because he believed in what I was trying to do. So, and he knew of my dream. And so as a second year graduate student, he handed me a telephone number on the back of a torn envelope and said, this guy called me, you know, he knows I'm the head of the meteorology department, and he wanted somebody to provide him with forecasts, five-day individual forecasts for gas operation of the natural gas company, and he may even pay you for it if he can do it. So I called him and charged him $50 a month. We served him in a 62-63 winter season for 3.5 months. I collected $175 for 3.5 months, and AccuWeather was off and running.
Wow. That's great.
That's awesome. Oh my God.
So how does number 2, 3, 4, I mean, do you start then asking the first, or do you drop the name of the first one to get the second one? How does that just keep on going then?
Well, I just started calling all kinds of utility companies and natural gas companies. I got another one in Northeast Pennsylvania for a couple of years. Then I started, got interested in snow for ski areas, artificial snowmaking. The ski areas didn't understand the artificial snowmaking process. And I explained to them how relative humidity was important. It was only the temperature because of the evaporative cooling. And so I developed a service to help them know when there would be good nights to make snow and when they were wasting their time and could actually ruin the snow by putting out water and such. So then I finally got about 65 ski areas to pay me. Over a period of 10 years, and most of the ski areas in the Northeast became clients. And then went did the mailing to cities and counties, and got, in fact, the first client I got, a city in Pennsylvania, is still our client today. They signed up in 1967. Wow. So I'm very proud of the fact that somewhere between 97 and 98% of our clients renew year after year.
That's so cool. Joel, when were you like, so you started it, you had a couple clients and you started to get rolling. When were you like, I need help? There's too many. I can't make all of these forecasts. I got to get someone else involved here. What was that like tipping point for you?
And trust them at the same time, right?
Seriously.
That's a great question, man. It was probably around 1964. My brother, Barry, who was nominated to head NOAA, as you may know, helped me out, called in some of the forecasts, and he ran for undergraduate president, so I was helping him, and so I got somebody to pay him $5 a day to plot maps for
That's
me.
Awesome.
In those days, you know, it was a lot different. Yeah, very
all hand drawn, right? Yeah,
all hand drawn. And so he was my first employee. nine years later, he left the university and started working for me full time. And then Elliot Abrams, who was an undergraduate, just came as a freshman. I was very impressed with him in 1960-67, and I hired him part time. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Joe Sobel, and my brother Evan, my youngest brother, probably in about 1968. But Elliot then became my first full time employee. I got my PhD in 1971, and was then prepared to serve radio stations and a TV. So we adopted the AccuWeather name, and I hired Elliot full time.
Wow. Yeah. And I can speak to Elliot. Elliot's awesome. Joel, I don't know if you know this, but I actually interned at AccuWeather back in 2015, I believe. And one of the first people I met was Elliot. And there were so many amazing people that I met while I interned there. And it was just an amazing experience. And Elliot was just, I was just like talking to him every day, just trying to learn more and more and more from him, because he is just so smart. I guess you started, you're kind of getting more and more and more and more clients. When did you guys, I guess, first of all, was it always called AccuWeather? And I guess the second question is, when did you guys like make the pivot and start having like some more broadcast elements?
Well, it was just under my name when I started in 1962. And then it's an interesting story. So I did the statewide television show. Charlie Hosler, Dr. Hosler, did the show, and then he had me start substituting sometimes in 1963. And I got a call when I was at WPSU, the television station on the university campus, Penn State campus, after the show from a station in Wilkes-Barre in 1968, WARM radio. And they said, you're so accurate, I'd like you to do our forecast. I said, I can't do anything else. I'll never get my PhD. I'll call you when I'm ready. So 3 years later, ready to graduate in September. So I called him in August. I graduated with my PhD. And so I said, I'm ready. And so I said, okay, but we're currently served by this pinpoint weather. We need a better name than pinpoint. So people, we know your forecasts are more accurate, but we want the name also to be better. So I came, I met with them. I had three names. AccuWeather was at the top of the list. I said, what do you think of these? They agreed with me that AccuWeather was the best. So that's how we started. Then once we had them, and we started in November of 71, I got my PhD in September. Of course, Elliot did the morning show. I did the afternoon. And I sent a mailing out to other radio stations. And then we signed up increasing numbers of them, so I needed more people. And KYW in Philadelphia was, I think, our third or fourth station. They started on January 4th, 1972. And several months later, Channel 6 in Philadelphia, the television station, called, say your forecasts are accurate and so on and so forth. Could we have the service? So it was our first television station. I said, well, let me check with KYW Television first, because there was a, said, because I don't want to, they're our client. KYW didn't want the service, at that time. They said no. So we went with Channel 6, WPVI. Of course, then about 5, 6, 7 years later, said, whatever PVI is paying you, we'll pay you three times the amount.
Wow.
Switch, but we don't do that. So we've been on, we celebrated our 50th anniversary 2 years ago on WPVI Channel 6 in Philly.
Wow. Yeah. So did you ever, too. Yeah. Go ahead.
Did you ever end up paying your brother more after all this then, or still?
Still, well, $5. Everybody got paid more. That was my brother who got the $5. That was Bob Clark, unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but he then worked for me from 1974 until he retired. He certainly did get paid more money as we grew and could afford to do so.
Well, so if you're tuning in, we're here with Dr. Joel Myers, founder of AccuWeather. Brady, just have to jump in, because as we're talking about the things that you started and the next step AccuWeather took and the next step, out of all these steps and all these new ventures that you've gone on with the company, what's the one you're most proud of? Is your favorite?
Well, we did a lot of things, obviously a lot of innovation. We designed the weather page for USA Today. We did a lot of creativity and innovation in the television, the whole presentation. We invented the temperature band map. We invented the window of movement for the hurricanes. A lot of things that the government adopted. We have 250 patents that we've licensed those back for free to the government. And but the thing we're most proud of is our dedication to superior accuracy. AccuWeather has saved more than 10,000 lives and prevented injury to over 100,000 people. That if it wasn't for AccuWeather, that would have occurred, because this is above and beyond warnings and forecasts from the National Weather Service and others.
So with where you, I think there isn't anybody probably has not heard of AccuWeather, but tell us, what all are you into today? I mean, it's got to just, and it's still probably growing, and what do you see for the future for it?
And where are you pivoting, right? Are you pivoting to any areas of like the new growth? Cause I know the industry's changing. That's a good question, Maz.
Right.
Well, let me give you a background what we do now. So we still have the radio business, television stations, a couple hundred television stations. We serve virtually all the newspapers that have a weather section in the United States, 713 newspapers. We work for more than half the Fortune 500 companies and thousands of businesses, as well as various state, county, and local municipality government agencies. We obviously have superior accuracy, and we differentiate ourselves from others in serving the needs of the client and tailoring our services to exactly what they need to reduce liability, to save lives, to help them make better decisions and avoid losses. That's what our people are dedicated to. But it's creativity, innovation. We have also the AccuWeather Network that reaches 30 million homes. Over the top and on the fast channel, probably reach 100 million more. We, of course, the biggest outreach we have is through AccuWeather.com and the AccuWeather app. We're listed, I think it's 86 of all websites in the world, with Google number one, obviously. So we're the biggest, most used weather source globally. Weather.com is still ahead of us in the United States, but globally, we're ahead of them. And so that's really our greatest outreach. And it's all the creativity. We just added lightning alerts last week. Constant innovation, creativity, many new things coming. That's what turns me on. Just so many things that we're developing to help people use our forecasts and our information to better their lives. We invented and patented within the last 6 months the AccuLumen Brightness Index, a 1 to 10 scale that lets people, most people, meteorologists look at the sky, most other people look out the window, and how bright is it out there? You know, mostly cloudy, overcast, partly sunny, but, is it a 10 and bright sunshine with glare may cause you to lose control of your car, or, is it a dull, damp day? And it's only a 1 or a 2.
So let me ask you this real quick, because I know we got to go to a break here in a little bit. But do you have like a think tank inside of your organization? I mean, where does all the creativity come from? And is it a daily meeting? I mean, tell me about that.
Well, it's a philosophy. It's a culture. That's what I instilled in all the people, and they carry it on. So it's constant. And it's an openness to ideas, creativity, crazy ideas. Some of them are crazy. Some of mine are crazy, and they get shot down, and that's fine. But constantly looking for better ways to forecast, to communicate the weather, to use everything. They talk now about social science. Well, we use social science. Elliot Abrams did his master's thesis on social science and different wording and so on back in 1973. People are discovering in the last 10 years like it's something new. That's part of what we've done in order so there's accuracy, there's greater accuracy, but there's also better communication, understanding how you help people make better decisions, how they think and how to react. Was there, like with Hurricane Katrina, we said ahead of time for 3 days, 50 to 70% of New Orleans will be underwater for days or weeks. We know what it is to cry wolf and not crying wolf. We're on all the networks because we have such a radical forecast. But we saved thousands of lives because the year before there was a false alarm for New Orleans. And so we thought people weren't going to believe, and this is for real.
Yeah, and Joel, too, I mean, I remember when I was there, we would start every day of all the kind of forecasters all getting around, all huddling around and talking about, you know, what we're expecting for the day. And it was just really cool. It was like a weather geek's paradise of just like talking about, okay, what do we think is going to happen? Where are the kind of biggest risk areas? And we each, and the cool thing was I was an intern, and they were asking, there were forecasters that have been here for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. They were asking me my opinion. I'm like, guys, I'm an intern. You know that, right? You know, I'm like in college. And they're like, yeah. And so it was a really cool culture, Joel. So I have to kind of step in there and just say, you're totally right. The culture is awesome.
Thank you.
So before we go to break here, Joel, one important question from a viewer, Elizabetta, says, Pats or Geno's for your Philly cheesesteak joints?
Ooh.
Boy, I haven't had a Philly cheesesteak probably in 25 years. So I don't remember.
25 years? Oh, man. I wish I had that kind of, you know.
Willpower?
Willpower, exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll tell you what, everybody. We're going to go ahead and take a short break. We're going to be right back with more from Joel, including his Invisible Iceberg book, right after these videos and a Storm Chaser safety tip.
It's time for this edition of Stormfront Freaks Podcast Storm Chaser Safety Tip.
Join retired Fire Battalion Chief Randy Denzer, EMA Director Eddie Aldrin, and Police Officer Eric Fox as we discuss some of the most common Storm Chaser safety pitfalls to avoid. All right, so we're talking Storm Chaser safety tips. I've got Randy Denzer. He's a retired fire battalion chief. He's got over 30 years in fire service, and he's a current storm spotter and public safety director for the Spotter Network. We've also got Eddie Aldrin. He's a former law enforcement officer and current storm chaser and director of emergency management for Nemaha County in Kansas. So, gentlemen, we're going to talk a little bit about team chasing, basically multiple vehicle team chasing versus solo chasing as we talk about safety items to be thinking about. Randy, I'm going to start with you. I know you've got a little experience caravan chasing. I guess tell us what are some of the easy to identify hazards with chasing in a caravan that people need to be aware of?
Well, one of the biggest hazards is having too much fun in caravan chasing. It's too bad there's not more of it anymore, first of all, Phil. Those were the good old days. Great times. Safety wise, one of the interesting aspects of having caravan chase was that the safety officer role was kind of passed around between the group. And so there was always somebody who was kind of dedicated into saying, hey, are we being safe here? One of the biggest issues with caravan chasing is that not just getting one vehicle stuck or getting one vehicle into a problem, but getting four or five vehicles into a problem. So which is a little different than individual chasing, because when you're individually chasing, you just worry about yourself. If you're in that lead vehicle on a caravan chase or team chasing, you need to make sure that where you're going, there's plenty of room to turn around for a whole group of vehicles. It can be quite a task. One of the biggest safety items, I think, for caravan or team chasing is obviously communications between the vehicles, using whether it's a CB radio, ham radio, or some type of radio, and making sure that all actions, you know, whether you're going to make a left-hand turn coming up, all that stuff is actually relayed to the whole team so everybody knows exactly what's going on and you're all on the same page. But I think that caravan chasing can actually be kind of, you know, safer in a lot of ways, because if one vehicle has a problem, you have other people there that can help out. You can send somebody to the nearest gas station to get fuel if, heaven forbid, somebody runs out or get a vehicle fixed. So I think it's safer intrinsically, but there's a lot to it. And so if there's anybody out there that decides they want to go start doing team chasing, the biggest secret is to making sure that you have radios and that you're in good communications with each other and that there's no surprises. You can't make a left turn down a dirt road with five vehicles and without communicating it.
Good. Eddie, I want to jump to you, talk a little bit about solo storm chasing and what are some of the biggest safety hazards and things to be aware of if you are chasing by yourself.
The biggest thing when you're solo chasing, situational awareness, coming from law enforcement, my previous career before the one I'm in now, and Eric can talk to this being current law enforcement, is always having situational awareness. When you're driving down the road, and it was a lot easier when the Randy and Eric and I first started chasing, when we were chasing with cell phones because there weren't laptops and radar in your car to have to pay attention to. Things were a lot simpler back then, but with all the distractions that we have now, when it comes to storm chasing, while also having to pay attention to actually driving, I think people now have less situational awareness when it comes to storms. Case in point, I was on a tornado out by Great Bend, Kansas, on K-96, which runs northwest out of town, south of Hoisington, Kansas. And there was a hedgerow on the left side of the roadway, pretty thick. I couldn't see through it and what was on the other side. I was paying attention to my laptop with the radar on it, and it started seeing some vorticity in there. But if anyone knows that part of the state of Kansas, radar coverage out there is atrocious. So you're not really getting very good radar scans and returns on that. So I kind of had a little idea that something may be going on, but I couldn't see it past that hedgerow there. So when I came to the end of the hedgerow, there was a cone tornado probably a quarter of a mile away from me. And I had no idea it was there. If I had someone with me that could pay attention and could also be looking through all the breaks in the trees, they might have had a better idea of what was out in that field on the other side of that hedgerow. So since then, I've really have dialed back on my solo chasing just because of the safety aspect of it, just because there's so much you have to do to safely chase, but then also to safely drive down the road, protecting yourself and others that might be on the roadway.
Welcome to Outbreak, a new live stream format brought to you by the Stormfront Freaks podcast, hosted by me, meteorologist Brady Harris, also known as Stormcat 5. We'll go live on days of extreme weather with the goal of keeping you safe, informed, and entertained. The only question that remains is, are you ready for the outbreak?
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
All right, so welcome back to the show. So we're honored to have Dr. Joel Myers here with us this evening, founder of AccuWeather. We want to talk a little bit about your book, your new book that we talked about at the beginning of the show, Invisible Iceberg. One of the things that I want to share with you, Joel, is what I loved about the book. So I'm probably on the spectrum a little bit with a little ADHD. And I love the fact that the chapters, which covered basically how weather and climate has impacted so many historical events in our human history. And it took weather, which I love, and then took history, which to me is always intriguing and interesting. And it brought those two things together, but it got to the point, right? You gave a lot of these were history lessons that many of us probably are aware of already, but you didn't take 25 pages to give a backstory to what led up to that historical event. You just kind of jumped right in and said, here's what was going on and here's what happened. But as I was reading the book, there was one quote that I specifically had written down because it kind of what I felt highlighted just about every single chapter in that book. You said, weather and climate turn so unfavorable that there is insufficient food supply, then little else matters and humanity faces great turmoil. So the important part of the fact that when all of a sudden there's some weather or climate event and now there's a lack of food or maybe even water, people, that basic need, right, will cause a lot of turmoil. Of all those different events of history that you wrote about in the book, I guess which one is the most interesting to you? What was your favorite and why?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, they're all favorites. That's why we're in the book. But obviously the title is, Invisible Iceberg, and that's about the Titanic. And it's a classic story in the movies. And it was so fascinating because it was the biggest thing ever created by humans. The biggest ship, the biggest thing that humans ever did. It was unsinkable, and it set sail. And it had all kinds of famous people on, and every spectrum of humanity was on that ship. And on its maiden voyage, it went down. And it was such a shock. And at the time, and it's still over 100 years later, it intrigues people and captures everybody's interest and imagination. And the fascinating thing about the story was everything was right for the ship to sink. Unfortunately, everything was, there was no moon. And so one of the ways that the lookouts detected an iceberg was they could see it, but there was no moon. It was dark. It was also calm. It was right in the center of a high pressure area when it happened. So another way is they would listen for the waves lapping against the ice, but it was right in the center of a high. There was no wind, and it was calm, and the water was calm. So they didn't really see the iceberg until it was a mile away. Also, it was an inversion. It was so cold. The temperature of the water was 29, the air temperature 29. And so the light bent up. So the iceberg wasn't seen until it was closer than usual, and it looked smaller than it really was. Other things that were fascinating, the main person supposed to be on the bridge was fired the day before it sailed. And unfortunately, he didn't turn in the key, and the key was necessary to open one of the drawers on the bridge where the binoculars were. So they didn't have any binoculars. Mm-hmm. And then when the iceberg hit and was going down, they did have enough lifeboats for what the law said. In fact, far more, but not enough for everybody on board. But a lot of people didn't get into the lifeboats because, first of all, it's very cold. An hour earlier, it was 50 degrees. And if people went into the water at 50, they would have survived for over an hour.
Wow.
It was 29. They survived for 15 to 20 minutes because it was just so cold. But also, it was so cold. People didn't have coats and jackets and all. And so they didn't want to get in a lifeboat. They said, this big ship can't really sink. It's too cold. And a lot of lifeboats were lowered with 50% or less capacity. And so there were so many things that happened. You know, they sent flares up. But again, because of the bending of the light and so on, and the ship that was only 3-4 miles away, didn't think it was flares. They had turned their radio off. Everything went wrong. Everything.
Now, do you have have you always had this just in nature of wanting to understand history? And, no. And how did that come about too?
I don't know. I've always been interested in politics and everything influences whether it's the economy or history, events. It's just I have a natural interest in it, but obviously my main interest has been in weather and climate and science. But I don't know. And these things just seem to, I guess I did have an interest in both, and somehow they both appealed to me. And the curiosity, I've always been curious about a lot of things, so maybe that's part of it.
Do you have a lot of other books in mind? You're like, oh, they're all, I've got like four or five books in my head.
Well, I'm going to do a follow-up on this about what the future climate is likely to be. I mean, there's climate models, there's trends, and so on. And we're doing some of that now for businesses so they can plan 20, 30, 40 years ahead, just in general, because some of the climate models, they conflict in different ways. I've already written two other books. One, I just have to get them published. One is like 25 people you never heard of who saved civilization, nothing to do with the weather. And another one, I don't know, the person I worked with, Delp Wright, said it should be called America's Weatherman, but it's about my life and entrepreneurship and some of the lessons I've learned. Some of the things I teach to AccuWeather employees, I give a two-hour presentation to all new employees. Everybody's been there within 3 months. And and about my life and my family and things I believe in. So I just got to get around to, you know, once you start, it's one thing to get it to a publisher and get them to agree to publish it. That's when the work begins.
Yeah. Wow.
Brady, do you have one more question? Slip it in.
To be honest, because I think that was coming outside my window. I think there's outside my window. You guys may have under there. But Joel, I did have a question because I feel like there's a lot of different stories in this book, right? And you kind of talked about one of them. Is there one, you know, Elstein, I think the one that stuck out, is there one that you were the most interested in when you wrote the book? Because I know you kind of start right at the beginning, you know, and you tell several different kind of stories relating to climate. Was there one that, like, when you were going into it, that maybe you were just like really fascinated as you learned more and more?
Oh, so many. I mean, Chichen Itza you know, you get a tour and the pyramids and how far advanced the Mayan civilization was in central Mexico, how much mathematics and astronomy they knew. Why was it? What was driving them? And they had this competition every year where, you know, all these men around 20 years of age competed to try and get that metal ball through the one that won was sacrificed and tied with a rope with basically the prom queen, the beautiful virgin, and they were rocks and they were thrown into this quarry to drown as a sacrifice to the rain god. So,
wow. Good times.
Why did that happen?
So, good times.
Thinking about it, it was the ITZ, the Intertropical Conversion Zone. Huh. They were right on the edge of it. So climate varies. Wow. And so if it didn't come for one year, they were okay. They had grain, you know, they're great farmers and so on. If 2 years, they were still okay. If it didn't come 3 years in a row, they probably were in deep trouble. And finally, a drought did hit that lasted several years, and the whole civilization unwound and fell apart.
Oh, my goodness. That's wild.
Did you climb Chichen Itza?
I did. When you could. Oh. I don't think they let you put it apart.
Nice. Yeah, they don't let you do it anymore.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. Hey, so that's...
So the tour guide, when I got down, said, you know, probably 25 people fall to their death every year here.
That's crazy.
More good times.
Bill, I heard another bolt out my window.
Yeah, so... Joel,
time.
That's the sound. It's time for our lightning round. So our lightning round is our game show of flashy and brilliant questions we always play with our guests. And tonight, I don't have a flashy and brilliant name for this. I'm just going to call it True or False History.
Can't hear. Are you talking?
No, we were just playing our video. We're all good. So so true or false history. So here's what I'm going to do. I've got like eight or nine strange facts about historical figures and historical situations in our human history, since we've been talking about history. And your key is, you're just going to tell me, is it a true statement or a false statement? Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So here we go.
Don't ask us.
Are we putting money on? Are we putting money on this? I'm just kidding.
I'm not.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
You start hearing these questions, and yeah, I don't know if I would either. So here's the first statement: Alexander the Great was accidentally buried alive. True or false?
True.
That is true. Yep. Scientists believe Alexander suffered from a neurological disorder. They believe that when he died, he was actually just paralyzed and mentally unaware.
Really? Oh, my. That's kind of terrifying.
Yeah. All right. Here's the next one, Joel. From 1912 to 1948, the Olympic Games held competitions in the fine arts. True or false?
True.
How would you even do that? Like that someone draws someone draws like a picture of a whale or something. Like yep, that's a gold medal.
That's you. No good. medals were given for literature, architecture, sculpture, painting, and music. Obviously, the art created was required to be Olympic themed.
Huh.
So maybe that's where the Olympic the musical theme came from. All right, famous conqueror Napoleon Bonaparte was once attacked by a horde of penguins. True or false?
No.
True.
Joel,
that is false.
You said that so quick. I was like, oh,
I know. I was like,
you know,
it was a horde of rabbits. He had requested that a rabbit hunt be arranged for himself and his men. When the rabbits were released from their cages, the bunnies charged toward Bonaparte and his men in an unstoppable onslaught.
Oh, wow.
With teeth like this.
Right? Angry bunnies.
Angry bunnies. All right. Next one. Cleopatra wasn't actually Egyptian. True or false?
False.
That is true. As far as historians can tell, Egypt's famous femme fatale was actually Greek. She was a descendant of Alexander the Great's general Ptolemy.
Wow.
Really?
All right. Oh, here's a good one, Joel, because you mentioned this in your book. During the Salem witch trials, 2,000 accused witches were actually burned at the stake. True or false?
In the witch trials in New England?
Yes. Yeah, New England. Sorry. It doesn't specify that, but.
True.
That is false. It says the majority were jailed and some were hanged, but none of the 2,000 people accused ever got burned alive.
Wait, you've got to be kidding me. Isn't that the whole story? Like, burn the witch. She's a witch burner. Like,
no, that's Monty Python.
Well, yeah, but there's a lot true in Monty Python. Like, you know, I've seen rabbits jump grab on someone's neck before.
Okay.
Come on.
Oh, okay, here we go. Next one, Joel. The shortest war in history lasted 38 days. True or false?
False.
That's correct. It's 38 minutes.
38 minutes?
It was between Britain and Zanzibar and is known as the Anglo-Zanzibar War. The war occurred on August 27th, 1896. It was over the ascension of the next sultan in Zanzibar and resulted in a British victory in 38 minutes.
It took longer to say the name.
So, yeah. So, Joel, you might want to put that in your follow-up book, that the Anglo-Zanzibar War. I'm sure weather had something to do with that.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to check that.
Maybe not. Maybe not. All right, a couple more. King Henry VIII of England had servants who were called grooms of stool, whose job was to wipe his bottom after he went to the bathroom. True or false?
Boy, oh boy. True.
Oh, gosh.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's why I'm on Team Bidet, because, I mean, that's just...
During his reign, he had all four of these individuals knighted.
That's gross. That's not worth it.
All right. While in power, Pope Gregory the Ninth declared that cats were to be associated with devil worship and had them exterminated.
Oh, come on.
True.
That is true. Some believe the disappearance of those cats helped rats spread the bubonic plague, aka Black Death, that killed millions of people in the 1300s.
See, never get rid of the cats. We need cats, everyone. Come on now.
All right, last one. This is for all the marbles. Winston Churchill typically drank 8 to 10 shots a day, sometimes as much as 15. True or false?
True.
Yeah.
That's got to be. Yeah.
I'm going to say that could be true. It's actually the statement was in regards to cigars. However, during the American Prohibition, he would get a doctor's note saying he needed to drink indefinite amounts of alcohol whenever he would come visit the States. So I would imagine that was true. He must have drank and smoked like a filthy chimney.
the precursor to medical marijuana, right? Oh, I need a specific doctor.
That's right. So anyway, Joel, great job. You did awesome on that.
Bravo.
Do this. Let our listeners and viewers know where they can find you, and more importantly, how they can get a hold of your book.
Well, the book's available on Amazon and a number of bookstores, so it should be easy to get. In fact, it was, when it first came out, it was the bestseller, top of the list in two categories.
Nice.
They can find me on LinkedIn.
Very good. All right. Well, tell you what, folks, we're going to take our final break, and we're going to be coming back with our favorite WXAI Mad Lib. So stay tuned.
Hi, this is Mark Massaro, known as Maz, and I'm one of the co-hosts of the Stormfront Freaks podcast, the most entertaining weather podcast on your listening device. Hey, here's a message to get you weather ready. The spring season is here, and we want to prepare you for spring weather threats, which includes flooding. If you're in your car, do not drive into flooded roadways or around a barricade. Turn around, don't drown. You know that saying. Water may be deeper than it appears and can hide many hazards like sharp objects, washed out road surfaces, and electrical wires. A vehicle caught in swiftly moving water can be swept away in a matter of seconds. Just 12 inches of water can float a car or a small SUV, and 18 inches of water can carry away large vehicles. For more information, please visit the NOAA Weather Ready Nation website at weather.gov/WRN.
I'm Tim Marshall, storm chaser, meteorologist, and engineer with the Stormfront Freaks podcast.
Let's take a drive under the moon. Let's take a drive under the somber sky. Let's take a drive under the moon.
Whoa! That did not look fun. All right. Hey, time now for Weather Fools. This is where people are doing just some fascinatingly fun and funny stuff that happens in weather. So we've got a few of those for tonight. Phil, tell us what do you have?
All right, first one is from our Patreon teammate, good old Cowboy Steve Collier. I call this because this is not the one I was expecting. This is from Fuzzy. This one is Small World, Flat Earth.
Sorry, and, it's the first one on your list.
No, is it really? All right, so I put him up wrong. But so I'm assuming this person, I call it a small world, but flat earth, because I'm assuming this is probably one of those good old flat earth people. But he said to this meteorologist, why the hell do you keep posting this in Spanish? We're in America. And meteorologist said, we're in America. And as a Marine, I proudly serve to ensure you have the freedom to post your opinion, no matter how idiotic on my part. I also post in Spanish to make sure everyone is prepared for severe weather. So that's why it's small world, but flat earth. This one probably could have been a weather troll bot as well, but I think it works as a weather fool.
Good point. Oklahoma City weatherman.
Yeah.
And thank you for your service.
Okay, so this one is, I call this swim lessons required. This is a good turnaround, don't drown. There is a semi-truck who tried to go across flooded waters and just couldn't see the road, obviously, and fell down the side of the road is now deep in the water, deep in the ditch, and the whole semi-truck's basically floating at this point. And the driver is climbing out of the window of his cab and jumping onto the top of his cab.
Oh, it's going. Look at that thing.
Yeah. So again, guys, the flooded waters, part of the issue is not always whether it's flowing strong enough to take your vehicle, but can you see what's under you?
Oh yeah. And in he this obviously case, couldn't see anything.
He could not. Certainly didn't see the road, and he just veered a little bit too far to the right, and next thing you know, bloop, there he goes.
And that rig is toast.
All right, this last one. This is from Cowboy Steve Collier. Because your window is a safe place to film a tornado from. Because it's not. But this person's filming a tornado out their window of their house. That sucker's close. The beginning
of it. Very close, my gosh.
MJ, back up to the beginning, if you can back up to the beginning of that again. Whoa. And watch the play equipment, playhouse equipment go flying.
Whoop. Oh, look at it. Wow.
So that stuff.
Super close. Oh my God.
And that's their yard. That's their backyard, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And they're just filming out their window, right? They're not worried about any debris because apparently the window will protect them. Go ahead, Brady.
That was the Nebraska, EF3 tornado near Lincoln. And that
Elkhorn.
That video. That video was, Elkhorn. That was crazy.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. I was like yesterday. So I drove for 14 hours storm chasing yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's always the people that in their backyard just filmed, got their camera and just filmed the tornado. And I drove for 14 hours to not see a tornado yesterday. That was.
Wow. Was that all three? Did you do three?
That was three. It was all three of them. Yeah.
Oh, that went fast.
You almost got struck by lightning too, Phil.
Well, I did. I will say this. I did get others from Steve Collier and Alec Esno, who are our Patreon teammates. But I just want to remind everybody, if the videos are branded, meaning let's say AccuWeather made the video or the Weather Channel made that video, took the social media post and then put text and other things over it, that's kind of copyrighted and we can't show that without getting dinged on YouTube and everything else. So thanks for sending that stuff, but that's just why we can't show it.
And by the way, you can check out all these videos on episode 209 in the show notes of stormfrontfreaks.com. They're good, especially that last one.
Send me a postcard, drop me a line.
You've got mail, baby, yeah.
So, checking the Freak fan box. We have something in the fan box. I do want to say this. Shout out to all of our Outbreak viewers. That have sent very kind words during the show, in the chat, and even during Stormfront Freaks Live. We get all kinds of great stuff from all of you. But just a big shout out to that, sharing some great things about Stormcat 5, Brady and the entire coverage crew. Maz was just on that a couple days ago as well. MJ was on there helping to share when there were some tornadoes up in Minnesota. So our whole crew gets involved in that, but certainly Brady's leading the way, and we've been getting a lot of great feedback. So thank you to all of you. Brady, I'll open the stage to you as well. You can say thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I just like I said, like I think this is a lot of the core group that's here, and you guys are amazing. You guys are the OGs. So thank you guys so much. And all the freaks that have been jumping on, and you know, I had no idea Maz was so good at nowcasting severe weather. And MJ too. I mean, and Phil, you know, it's just unbelievable. So we have a really amazing group of people. We have a really, really amazing group of people that are getting involved in the chat and watching this show too. And you guys are smart as well. You know, Jess and others, you guys are identifying sometimes warnings before I'm even seeing them. So you guys are really helpful. I want you guys to know that keep it going, and we're going to keep this train rolling.
Awesome, but we do have a note from Gabriel Harbor, who goes by Crazy Gaby on Twitter. He's actually the host of Chaser Chat, and we've had an opportunity to collaborate with him on a couple things. Gabriel said, birding peep weather, who's Cassandra Woodson, said, loved your episode of Stormfront Freaks. So thanks, awesome. Gabe, for making that comment. Yeah, we appreciate it.
Very nice.
So, I want to let everybody know we were going to do another segment tonight that we're throwing in a can for now because I used to have a link to, it was DALL-E 2 for AI to kind of create images for you. And apparently that's not operating anymore. And someone mentioned, I think in the comments, that might have been Elizabetta. Who else would it have been? Yeah, Elizabetta said, hey, ChatGPT images generator app is free. But I was looking for it. I couldn't find it. I didn't want to waste time looking for it. So we're not doing the WX AI Mad Libs tonight. But I am going to play a game with all of our freaks. It's not really a game, but we're going to have some fun with all of our freaks. And many of you have maybe seen this in the past. This is the What's Your Storm Chaser Name? And it's a diagram. I'll put a link to this in our show notes for episode 209. If you go to stormfrontfreaks.com, look up episode 209 and then go to the show notes. The link will be here. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this with everybody. Number one, your storm chaser name is based on the first initial to your first name, your middle initial for your storm chaser middle name, and your last initial to find your storm chaser last name. So, Brady, I'm going to start with you. So, obviously, B, being the first initial to your first name, is Boisterous. So, Boisterous, what's your middle initial?
My middle initial is M, but I don't like my middle name, so I'm not going to tell any. I haven't told anyone except for my family. But,
Mary?
You're kind of close there, Phil.
I'd pass on that one too, but all right. So M, so it's Mamatis. So Boisterous, Mamatis, and then Brady Harris H is Handler.
That makes kind of sense, Phil, because I've got a little bit of a, you know, I've got some rounded parts of me, kind of like Mamatis Clown.
You hear what your last name was?
This last is pretty good.
It's Boisterous Mamatis Handler.
No!
Boisterous Mamatis Handler.
Of course it is.
Oh, that's good. All right, so we got MJ. So M, Masterful,
obviously.
I know your middle initial is C. Core, yeah. Masterful, Core. J for Johnson is Jumper. Masterful, Core Jumper.
Core jumper. There we go.
Ooh, I like
that's
it.
Good. It's no Mamatis Handler, but it's still.
I can't top that.
That's so good.
Here it goes.
Don't go there.
All right, Mark Massaro. So M, Masterful. What's your middle initial?
E.
Masterful, EF5.
M.
And then Massaro, M, Maker. Masterful, EF5, Maker. EF5,
Maker. There we go. He's trouble.
That's got some undertones to it.
Only after burritos. That's good. Right. That's good. Yes. All right, and then mine, P is Amateur. That's probably legit. Jetstream, Amateur Jetstream Jumper. Nice. I am Amateur
All right, let's do the ladies.
Well, I don't know their middle.
We don't know their middle initials.
Let's make one up.
Yeah, let's make
one
up.
Okay. All right, so we'll do Dina. Dina is D for doctor. What would be your middle initial? F. Would be Funnel.
Dr. Funnel.
Knightley is Crasher. Dr. Funnel Crasher.
Funnel Crasher.
Oh, I like it. That's a good one.
Funnel Crasher.
All right. We'll go to Serena. C for crazy. Middle L. initial. L?
Let's say L.
Crazy Lightning Stalker. Crazy Lightning Stalker.
Oh, yeah. That kind of fits.
All right. Yikes. And then
in a good way.
We'll do Jen Watson. J is Jolly. Guess her middle initial. What do we think her middle initial?
Brady, what's her middle initial?
P.
So Jolly, PDS, Whacker. Jolly PDS Whacker.
Alrighty then.
Pretty good. And then last, we'll do Greg's. G is Giddy. Brady, pick a middle initial for Greg.
Let's do. Have we done X yet?
No. Giddy Cap Jumper. He's a Giddy Cap Jumper.
Cap Jumper.
Yes, he is.
That's good. So, nice. So that was gonna play into our little WXAI. Segment tonight, but I thought that might be fun. Again, you guys can either play along, we're posting this on the video, or just go to our show notes, jump to stormfrontfreaks.com, and then you can go to episode 209, and then from there you can pull up the show notes, and we'll just have a link in the show notes to that. A lot of times, if you're listening to the audio podcast, you can see the show notes on your podcast player as well, so that'll all be there. So I think that just about does it for this episode of Stormfront Freaks Live. So thanks for tuning in. Do us a favor, as Brady always talks about, hey, if you like the show, certainly subscribe to the show, whether it's on YouTube or whatever it might be. Subscribe or follow us, and certainly also share it. Like, you can share it, go to your phone or whatever, hit that little share button with the arrow coming out of the box, and send it to a friend, send it to a family member. Let us know we're here, because now we're doing the outbreak shows as well as adding some vintage shows to the lineup. So we're kind of doing all kinds of content at this point. And let's find out, Freaks, how people can follow you. Stormcat, you are up. How can our listeners and viewers follow you?
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Stormcat5. And that's with an underscore at the end. Unfortunately, whoever took the original Stormcat5 has nothing to do with weather. So I'm hopefully going to approach them and try to get the OG. But for now, I'm Stormcat5 with an underscore.
Be careful how you approach them. I don't know what their content is. You never know with a name like Stormcat 5.
Exactly.
Right. My Mattis handler.
Furry little guy, you.
Or you could pass on the left by a student driver. This is not good.
Wow. How slow are you going?
Or you can follow Brady down the hallway of his apartment complex runs down the hallway and shoves the phone down his shorts. A good way to follow him. So, yes. Maz,
you were streaming.
Maz, how can people follow you, find you?
You can find me on X at MoneyStorm, the number 4, the letter U. That's at MoneyStorm 4 U.
Sweet. MJ.
On X at Mark Stormpod with a C, M-A-R-C Stormpod.
Right. All right, all in favor of keeping MJ like on the show and not in the back of the studio, raise your hands, moving forward.
Yes.
All in favor, say aye.
I'll take it one step further. If MJ doesn't come to the front, I won't join. I'll go to the back. I'll go to the back as long as MJ goes to the back.
We don't have the right layout. We'll talk.
A hunger strike.
We can make it. We'll
control that.
We can make him bigger, faster, and stronger. All right. Our next episode. Oh, by the way, special thanks to our guest tonight, Dr. Joel Myers. That was a lot of fun with him. First time guest. That was pretty good. So our next episode, from the Dominator 3 to our studio, Team Dominator, Storm Chaser, and social media specialist Edgar O'Neill will be with us. We're going to be live Thursday, May 23rd, 9 p.m., 8 o'clock Central. On YouTube, while the audio podcast, as always, will be available that weekend on your podcast player. And for all you watching, stick around for our after show party. So for MJ, Brady, and Maz, it's just the four of us. Just the four of us. We can make it if we try. Just the four of us. All of you and I. All right, we'll catch you next time. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to the Stormfront Freaks podcast. You can watch our bi-weekly show live on youtube.com/stormfrontfreaks and download the audio version on your favorite podcast player. For links to our Patreon team of exclusive benefits, show notes, past shows, new videos, merchandise, and more, visit our website at stormfrontfreaks.com. While you're there, check out our interactive chaser radar from our friends at zoomradar.com. If you'd like to contact us with questions or make comments about the show, shoot us an email to questions@stormfrontfreaks.com or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. Search for Stormfront Freaks. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next time and tell a friend about the Stormfront Freaks podcast.